This is James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Small Talk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008.
Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this really.
Here's Richard Weddle at ESOG 2008 talking about Code City.
So what we want to display is software systems as realistic as possible in cities. Because in cities, humans are able to get orientation very fast and they know how to explore it. And I want to explain you the components of this city metaphor that I use. So the classes, which are the main orientation points for developers, I have classes and buildings of the city, and the packages are represented as the districts of the city. And you can see that the package hierarchy is reflected in the way the districts are stacked on the city, and the system itself is represented by the city. Now, you would wonder what are the heights and what are the dimensions of the buildings. So, for the beginning, you should know that I just changed fonts in case you don't see anything that will explain what should be there. So, on the height of the building, you have the number of elements, and on the base size, on both width and length, you have the number of elements. This way, you will see more or less how rich that class is. And on the packages, we have a color scheme ranging from light blue shades to dark blue shades according to the nesting of the package. Now, this is how a real system looks like, because what you saw just before was a toy system. So this is WML Java system. You may wonder why I'm looking at the Java system, because they are more inclined to laugh about it. What you can see from such a city is you can see outliers. For example, you see the skyscrapers. And what that means is these classes have a large number of methods and few attributes. On the opposite end, you see the parking lots, this is how we call it, how we call them, because they are very wide and they are very flat. And that's because they have lots of attributes and no methods or very few. And then you have the office buildings, which have both of them, so they have lots of functionality and also a lot of state. Now, since I talked about the mapping and looking at software properties through a visual property, I will show you four different types of mappings that we implemented. So the simplest one is the one based on the identity function, which means that what you see here is first the y-axis on the left side is the input measure, so the software metric that we will use for this example, and in this case is the number of methods. And here you can see in a given system which are the actual input values, so the input data set. And in the middle, you see the transformation which we apply on those on that input data set to obtain an output data set which conforms to whatever we need according to a task. And in this case, the transformation block repeats whatever it gets from the input. And this is what you get as output values, because the output value is the height. So these are the heights of the buildings if we were to use such a function. And this is how it looks like on another UML again. The advantage of this is that it provides the most accurate way of representing these values, because it's one-to-one mapping. The disadvantage is that in some cases there are outliers which are way too big, and in those cases, if you want to have the overview of the city, you may go too far away so that the normal size buildings are almost invisible. And in other cases, you may not be interested in looking at all the particular values of the input and transform magic, but you may be interested in looking at categories. So for example, large classes from the point of view of number of values, small classes from the same point of view. And what we do in the case that we have very large outliers is that we apply a linear function in the transformer, and we as a user in CodeCD are able to specify the range, the output range, which is here, through the two boundaries, the maximum and the minimum. And what it does on the same data set is that it scales to the output and you obtain somehow the same profile but linearly scales to the transformer. And this is how the same system looks like in linear manner. Now, I talked about categories, and sometimes you would like to have only a small number of categories. For example, you are interested in the average class from a particular point of view. And what we wanted is to have a small number, such as 5, in which we have average, very high, low, and very low. So these are the categories. And for these categories, we can specify in CodeCD which are the output values that are representatives for these categories. What we do with the input is that we apply the box plot technique from statistics, which basically groups around the median, which is, if you order the values of the input, is exactly in the middle. So they group around the median the 50% of the values, and this is this box here. And then it also computes the boundaries which represent values from which, for example, the boundaries which are lower than here are considered lower outliers, lower extreme values, and the same goes for the upper part. And what we do is we obtain 5 ranges, so the median and the other two, so the outliers. And this is actually the transformation function. And we have the same input data, but we obtain only 5 different values. And this is how the same system looks like. The advantage of this is that it creates a very well-balanced city, but with the price of one. The balanced city comes because this computation is done relatively to the values, input values in every system, which means every system will have the 50% of values which are average values for that system. So you obtain something very balanced, but maybe that's not what you want. Maybe you would want to compare it with other systems. And in this case, we have the same thing, and what we do is we say, based on some statistical data, we know that these are the values for us, the boundaries for the different categories. And then we have the same, but this could be completely different from the box plot one. It's just that you have also five different categories. And this is how the system looks like. And now I will play the sequence of the map. So this is the identity mapping, this is the linear mapping, this is the linear mapping, then you have the box plot mapping, which is very balanced, and the threshold. So some of those went down because the average was different from the ones that I translated to those boundaries. Now, what can we use CodeCD to do? What is the purpose of CodeCD? So one thing that we did is use CodeCD to understand programs. For reverse engineering, for maintenance. And what we did first, this was our first case study, is that we analyzed the system, ArduUML, and at the beginning we looked at the two large towers there, and then there are some pairs, if you see, which are made of platforms, one platform and a large building. This is kind of interesting, you see. So first, when we analyze so-called wind towers. We saw that one of them, so the smallest one, is called Facade, and it's a Java interface which has lots of methods. And then the other tower near it, it should have maybe something to do with it, because it's as big as it or maybe a bit bigger. And actually it is, because in Java you have to implement at least the methods defined clearly in the interface. So that's why they have the same height. But now the question is, why would you have an interface and an implementing class if you don't have another implementing class if you use Polymorph? And actually they don't have it. And this was a question mark that we remained with after this experiment. Then we looked at these combinations of large buildings, massive buildings with the parking lots. And what we saw interestingly is that first we have a package which is called Java Generate or something, and we have a class called Java Token Types, which is an interface actually, which defines all the tokens and the constants that the parser needs, which is Java Recognizer. Then the same, do you know what ArgoUML is, by the way? Do you know what ArgoUML is?
It's a
system which can generate UML diagrams from code, and also can generate code from UML diagrams. And first it only provided support for Java. And you see that here it's also the CPP parser, so they added some C++, and you can see that visibly the C++ parser is larger than the Java parser, which is no surprise. And then, interestingly, you see another pair of Java token type and Java recognizer. And after looking at them, we saw that a lot of the code is duplicated. We have no idea why, but it is. For example, here, almost all the attributes on the left side could be extracted and used by both of them. And the same here. Another application that we looked at with Code City is the design. And there are various ways to assess design. For example, in the last 10 years, you have different definitions of bad design, so in the negative sense, bad smells, design flaws, and so on. Then you have had some kind of guidelines to do a better design in the form of heuristic design patterns, principles, and so on. And then there are techniques to detect all those problems, to be able to have something to look at when you do maintenance. But how do you visualize them? So we have the techniques, but there should be a way to put all that rich data into something that people can have a look at and grasp it as soon as possible. And just to show you how one of these techniques looks like, this is the God class detection strategy. These three are metrics, for example, weighted method count and so on, and very high and one search are thresholds, which are computed under input data set or statistics. And you can see that it's a bit more than just having a metric and looking at it. It's correlating all this. And the way to look at it could be this. You know, everybody knows Canoes, I guess. So you create a list, you select, you make a selection, and then you have here the entire context. So you have all the things which select with the selected ones, and then in the right panel you have only the problematic ones. But do you really have the context here? I mean, shouldn't you scroll like 100 times to be able to look at the system? A couple of thousand classes. So it would be difficult. Another way to look at it is this, for example. And here you can see that you have, this is a top view, the lower one. You see from the top, which are the problematic packages, or whether do you have some problems distributed uniformly through the system. And maybe for managers this is good or bad for the developers, I don't know. So to see who is doing things that shouldn't be there. And in this view, we only have the God classes. So the question is, there are several diseases with design problems. What do you do if you have several and want to look at more? open OR list.
You say you show only good classes, but the blue ones are
yeah.
the good
yeah. The blue ones are the good classes, and everything that's muted is the context of the rest of the system, which is not problematic with this problem that we're looking at. So this is how it looks like if you assign a color, a vivid color, to each of the problems. So up you cannot probably read, but I will tell you. So it's pure brain classes, pure God classes, classes which are both God and brain classes, and data classes. And that one allows you in CodeCity to select, I want to see only this type of problem, I assign it this color, and so on. And then you also see a brief which shows you how many classes you have, which have this problem. This is JDK, by the way, so it's a Java development system. It has some interesting problems here. Actually, this was interesting because you see here, this is a package which has lots of classes, and one of them has many, many attributes. This one, which is key head. And you would expect, having many attributes, few methods, that maybe it's a data class, right? And actually it isn't, because the way the data class detection strategy is computed, it needs that this class doesn't have a lot of functionality. And because of the different keys and the branches to take decisions according to the pressed key, there is some kind of functionality and a bit of complexity, and that's why it's not detected as a design problem. But the others are. Another one is RWMM that we looked at all the time. So you can see that, as expected, the big guys are there. So you have the brain classes, the God classes, but you also have some interesting things. For example, can you see this guy here? It's like the blue one. Mm-hmm. So it's not very big, it's like 10 methods or so, and it's a God class. So there are things, and after I've looked at them, for example, one of them had to do with the security. So there you have complex algorithms and so on. So there is a class who does everything. Now, since I have to introduce this because I use it further, until now you have seen one type of representation. So in the sense of granularity, you only saw classes as buildings, as blocks, right? And this is what you had mapped. This is a concrete example. So two attributes, seven methods. What if you want to look at the methods? So not to have them as a brief number, seven methods. I want to look at the methods. And what I do is, now I represent the class as the base. Of course, the packages are still there underneath. But now I represent the class as the base, so that I'm still able to interact with it in CodeCity. And the methods are represented as, I call them bricks, which are stacked on top of each other in layers of four. And this is the fine-grained representation. Now, using this representation, we are able to look at method-level design problems. One of them is, for example, feature M. You know what feature M is? So when a class has too much to do with another class and uses attributes and methods, and rather it should have the things at home. So these are the methods in JMOL, and you can see that a quarter of them have this problem. So I would say that's a good case for requirement. Another one is the shotgun surgery in RWMM. And here I used another layout, which basically, and I'll tell you why, because when you use that with only four methods on each layer, if you have classes with huge amounts of methods, you'll end up having very tall towers, and we don't want that. You want to be able to know that the classes are so massive, but maybe to have a better overview. And in this case, the layout is actually computing based on the number of methods, the bricks it needs to lay out, is computing the size of each wall. So you have walls, you'll still be able to interact with each of these. Each of that is a method. And actually, Now, this is the only joke I'm willing to take today. So, if you look at this with half-closed eye, does this remind you of something? Isn't it that? Okay. But apart from looking like the Death Star, this picture shows us something interesting. This guy here, which is all bloody, is actually facade, so the very tall interface. And shotgun surgery is exactly that problem, that if I change something inside one method of facade, let's say, many methods and classes dispersed throughout the system will have to change. And you see that facade is in itself a big problem, so it has lots of closed methods. Now, what we can do with Code City is to look at the history. And first, until now, we have only looked at models. So we have a class, class, a method, class, and so on. So a model for each. But in the case of history, everything gets much more complicated because you have the time. And a class can be a version of a class, so it can find itself in different versions. And accordingly, it has timestamps, which tells you when the class was committed in the repository. And all these class versions are brought together in what we call a class history. So you see, we start with a small little thing called class, and now we have that only for class. And you can imagine that we have the same for methods, for packages, for the whole system model. Here, you should read cores, so it's the granularity. So the evolution, the way we do it is, we have the two granularities according to a specific task, we choose one of them. And we have three techniques that I will present this time. And basically, so theoretically, we can have combinations between each of those. But in the end, it's important to know which makes sense, and not all of them make sense. That one makes a bit sense, and the other ones are really. Now, an important thing when I talk about looking at the history called city, it's very important to have consistent locality, because once you travel, because that's what you want to have. The first idea is I want to have the city and to be able to go from one version to the other and to have the city update itself. But on the other hand, I would like to look in one place, for example, at one class, and to still look at that class when the city updates itself, and to know that that's the class I was looking at. And what we do for that is we create practically a blueprint for the layout, which takes into account the largest size on each of the dimensions of each artifact. So if a class will have a building which is, let's say, 2 meters high and 15 and 13, in the end, the blueprint will contain a 50 or the highest of them. Okay? And whenever we have to put something, we first put the blueprint and then we center the thing which can be at highest that size. So this is the size which is assigned to it for the whole lifetime. Yes?
When you place the city blocks, do you then organize it so that you will have the minimum size for each version?
No, because I cannot do that and still have a consistent location. Because things are growing and...
Well, in combination. In combination, right?
I'm trying to have them. So I'm using the largest dimension set that I have for each of those, and then I'm using the kind of a rectangle packing layout to make use as I get the best of the space that I have. Okay. Did I answer?
Yes, but how many?
Okay, so let's say in version one we had classes foo and var, and you see that was foo. And you see that foo was not as big as its blueprint was, but this means it will still grow. And in the second version you see that foo has grown, and var has shrunken, and a appeared. And actually, imagine this, and I will show you in the demo that you look at this, and then you see that growing and the other one disappearing. So you will not see a stripe like this. It's pretty hard to explain on a slide. And then in the next version, foo is getting in its magnitude, and a remains the same, and bar disappears. And whatever happens here from now on, nobody will replace bar. This is the way we do it. As soon as we find something better and still makes sense, we do that. So for now, looking at history occupies a bit more space than the single version, but still you are able to make reason about it. Now the first technique is called HMAP. And what it does is provides some kind of information which is not very deep about the past of that entity element. And what we do is we apply a color layer on top of the elements, which basically, you see this blue. It basically tells you that that element is that many versions old. And what we do is, we know how many versions has a history, and we assign the first value, let's say the light-colored yellow to the youngest ones, the dark blue to the ones that have been there from the very beginning, and then everything else in between, depending on how many versions we have. And when I say we have versions, I mean that we are not looking at the entire subversion repository or store or whatever. We have to take samples, unfortunately. And the other thing which is interesting is that we put the bricks in chronological order, which means the elder will be at the base, like the base of the class, and the younger will be put always on top and go on. And this will allow you to see, for example, that the class which misses some bricks here, you know that that class had the methods there, but they disappeared. They were removed for some reason.
Will a building fall over if you take out all the bricks at the bottom?
Yeah. No, it should be nice to fall okay. over, but it will look like almost collapsed.
But will it hang in the air?
Yeah. For now, it's a bit science fiction. Now, how do you interpret such a class? Each of these is a class. And you look at this class from the latest version of your system, but you are able to have some information about its past. And what this class tells you is that, you see, this is the class here down, and these are its methods, right? So you see that the class has appeared really back when the system was created. And what you also see is that its method appeared, all of them, when the system was created. Which means that this class is very stable and old. Yes, please.
Is the version an absolute version number of the whole system, or...?
No, it's relative to the sampling.
So one class might be dark and...
It takes into account all the versions of that system.
Okay.
Now I get it. The next one is a pretty small one. It has like 9 methods, and it's almost as old as the other one, but it missed somehow the start of the system. That's it. And you can also see that after they did something, they created those 8 methods. They stopped, basically, because they didn't need to update it in any way. And after that, let's say in the second version report, they added a method. Which means this class is old, and you don't update it so often. So this is what it tells you. And here is the collapsing one, because you asked. So this is a class which, judging by the color, is pretty young. But in the two versions that it survived, some major changes happened. And you see that the classes, the methods which were here, were removed, most of them, and some others were added. So it's an unstable class I'm treating. That's all that you can tell looking at such a class. And the last one is very old. It is updated all the time. So the version of the system puts a couple of bricks in there on top, and sometimes it also removes some. So this, I would say, is either a core class or something that they didn't really consider that it would change. So this is how an entire system looks like with this binary page map. And an interesting thing is here, you see the very light colored package, so distributes, which means that that whole package was created two versions ago, if I can say so. And actually, what happened, because we talked to the developers, is that they said they created those, we did some kind of fancy ideas. We said maybe that happened, and also the other one, all kinds of hypotheses, all were wrong. But actually what happened is that they created stubs using some kind of generator for tests, because that's the test class. And then after a while you see those small ones which are more light in color. Those are the old tests which actually have a main and a suite. So that's used to just run all the tests in one package. Now talking about time travel. Time travel is what I talked to you about at the beginning when I said about history. And what I would like you to look at is this is RVML, and I will play a movie now. So it's RVML, eight versions of RVML, which are actually its major releases. And because we had that problem that there is an interface implemented by only one class, we were really curious about this and watched the... So you should look for a tall building of several, okay? So this is what happens. Then it appears, huge, it splits into two, there are three, the first one disappears, and that's it. So actually what happened is that they created a class which was already pretty big as they created it. In the next version it got huge, that probably some of the maintainers went away, took vacation or something. And then they split this class into an interface and the class, the implemented class, because they knew they will have another kind of model implementation. Which came after a while, and then they removed the old one, and this is what you have in the present days. And that's what the RVML developer told us. Maybe it's not. And this is the time travel of J. Hodro, where you will be able to see exactly when when the test package appeared. So it will be here. And you should see how, on this one, we also applied the age map. So you will see how the things get older and the new ones appear with very light colors and so on. Here we go. So things grow. And at one point, wow, it appears. And now they also put the suit and stuff. Okay. Now about the timeline. Timeline is a very interesting visualization. What you do is, until now we were able to look a bit at the history at the age, then we were able to really track an entity, because you saw that the large buildings were red. Actually put, we have something we call color tracking, and when we are interested in something we say, please provide this color for the entire history so that I'm able to also have the colors emphasized. And the timeline, what it does, it takes one single entity and you see in one visualization all the steps for the entire history. And as an example, here is class C. This is time, but in version, not in years or seconds or anymore. And I only annotated some of the methods, the ones that are important here, and you can see that In the first version of class C, everything is yellow because they have just been created, so they are one version only. Then, when you have the second version, you see that a couple of new ones have appeared. This one got old, they are green now. And you can see, for example, that method 5 is not there anymore because it was removed. But this is the way you will be able to look at a class, and you will know that there was something there. And by looking at the timeline, you will also know when it disappeared, with the precision of the sampling, of course. And then in the third version, some other methods appear, and the new one disappears. Okay, so in this case, you have a timeline of three versions of a fairly small class, but you will see how really timelines look like. So these are four timelines inside the JMOL system. This is also an open source system, and it has to do with drawing in 3D molecules and chemical stuff. And you can see here, for example, this one. I didn't put the names because I didn't want to. It wasn't important, but it's important the patterns and the way you can interpret this. For example, this one, you can see that here nothing happened, nothing much. Maybe they removed a bit here. But here they removed more, here they added some stuff. And this is interesting, but I'll come back to that. This one has a slightly constant period, and then it starts to grow. And you can see this one, that it really loses a lot of its body. This one really looks like, this reminds me of Jungle Book when Mowgli was running and everything was collapsed, do you remember?
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't say that maybe a method was renamed, it's still there but under another name.
Yeah, that has to do with the way you model the things.
Okay.
Since I'm using HISMO, in HISMO it's this way, as you say, so okay. It's a drawback if you want.
Okay.
Because you don't detect the names. There are systems, as far as I know, which assign to each of the elements an ID. A unique ID, and then the name, whenever it changes, you still have that unique ID. I don't know. So, maybe that. And what's interesting here is that what struck me is that I have several classes, several class histories, and in the same place, more or less, so in the same columns, you see, something happens. So, you see things disappearing, and then they appear again. And this happens also here, a bit. Here a lot, and here a lot. Okay? And what was actually happening, and we talked to the JMO developers, is that they made a change to some mathematical library that they used, and they were happy that they didn't have to use all those overloaded constructors and so on. And then they used the system, and they realized that there are some problems with the performance of the graphics. So then what they did, they restored them. They didn't try to see when. And this is what I was talking about. I forgot about the arrows. About scripting CDs. I'm very happy to have this because I had half of it after the last Moose Dojo when I worked with Doro to have something like the Easel in Mondrian, where you have the from this model, a model of a system, and you can write scripts and you can see immediately what happens and how it will be rendered. Okay. This works right now. So this is really good. And you may ask whether I have relationships. This is work in progress, so you'll have to forget about it. I just wanted to show you. So this is some kind of a bundle edges. They are bundled, and you can see, for example, that from here it goes there, and these are the tests in J model, and somewhere from here is the hierarchy of tests from Java.
So, sorry, each line there represents message send or
relations? Relations. But in this case, inheritance definition.
Right.
But you can map also accesses to attributes and locations to methods.
Don't you want to use some chip layout software for this?
Yes. Some
chip layout?
Yes.
The meshing.
I talked to you about it. Yeah. That would be nice. Okay. And now, some words about the tool, because I've talked and talked and you don't know whether this is in Java or in C++. So, actually it is in Visual Works 7.6. It uses Moose for a lot of things, mainly for having the FabX meta-model implementation, and also for the parsing and meta-computation of model concepts. And then if we need, or if you need C++ or Java models to look at, then you have to download either iPlasma or there are some more ones in the Moose, in the SCG repository as far as I know, but I use iPlasma because I'm coming from the group and I know it works.
What version control systems can you currently extract information from? Version information?
I'm not extracting directly from versions. I'm just taking the source code and parsing it, exporting, if you talk about the Java system or so, export it to MSC, which is a format more or less like an XML, that Moose can import it.
So you load up discrete versions of the system, analyze them?
I load all the versions I need,
right.
Then I parse them, and I obtain a sequence of files, which are, each of them is one of the versions of the system. And then, from there, I can load into Moose all the versions, and I can say, I want this four of them to be one history that I know. What we did once is that, actually exactly with that J-Hodro system, because it was kind of strange that the whole package appeared between two versions, the whole package. And thinking about that, I was like, yeah, but since it was a system like developed for over 5 or 6 years, maybe I don't have enough samples. And looking at the sample period, it was 6 months. Then maybe this is the explanation. So what I did is I took more of them, and then I took every week a sample, and I created a history of them. And it was the same. So actually,
they just forgot to check in.
No, it was the generating stuff. And I think it's even not implemented.
You said you support VisualWorks 7.6. Is it possible to create a relationship map on the previous slide for something like VisualWorks, which has no tagging, no strong tagging?
Rapidly, if you can define, for example, if you work with the easel, you can work with anything, not only with Moose models. Like I use, for example, now, so you have to tell it how to take it. For example, if you say inheritance definitions, then you have to specify edges within the inheritance definitions. If I have time, I will do a bit of scripting if you want. You can say from the superclass to the subclass, but that's relative to each of the inheritance definitions.
That means you need the scripting that is provided by people who have insight to compute the relations.
For now, yes, because what I have in the GUI is only what Moose supports, so inheritance, accesses, invocations. If I have something that was interesting, then I could put it. Yeah.
I thought Moose had some type inferencing stuff in it, doesn't it?
In the Moose?
Yeah, I thought it was. I'm sure I've seen in Smalltalk some analysis tool that type inferencing, so you could figure out all the...
Yeah.
And do you know whether that's in Moose or not?
I think it is, because when you look at the method, you know that it's referring to an object.
Or right.
It has some kind of type information. Okay. So that's what I use Moose. So iPlasma is used to parse, and then iPlasma has its own model, which can be then exported to something that Moose knows about. And then in Code City, I take the model, the visual model of the system, and then I compute everything, and in June I render it in OpenGL. Now I want to show you some systems that I have looked at. And there you have the last column says kilo lines of code. Okay? So this is Azurius, well known P2P system. In Java. So now you'll have a couple of Java systems, and you can see that each system has its own characteristics. Just check it out. This we have seen it enough. I think you already recognize it a bit. Yeah. Now this is J-Hodro. And iText is a used algorithm, and jmol, and jma, and now a bit of smallbox. So you see that the system is already looks sleeker. And you do that, it's the same mapping. This is June, and the things that are going overboard are the
C interface things.
Interfaces to the real hardware and to OpenGL. Okay, this is for C. And I also put for fun a C++. it's called like that, I didn't name it. It's FunGL. It's used, actually, it's an implementation of LucasArts rendering tool, and they use that for creating animation. And what I said, now I can see all those systems together. Why don't I look at all of them? And you can see, this is a visualization which has inside over 1 million lines of three different programming languages. Of course, you cannot just sum that up, because that's different, but it's scaled. So this is where you can look at OpenGL. You can download it, you can send me bad remarks and also good remarks if you like it. And it has been downloaded, so people seem to like it, so it's in 3 months or 4 months, it has been downloaded over 1,000 times, which is pretty cool. And this is the Smalltalk system.
Is it in the public store, by the way?
It is in SCG.
Yep.
In the terms of the
You
can have access.
Right. And how is it licensed?
For now, I don't know. I'm not sure about that, because actually June is licensed.
GPL.
Yeah, GPL. So you can do.
Right. Pretty harsh.
But one thing that I would like to do is to give it a try to the OpenGL that the guys at Syncom are doing.
Oh, right.
So Michael Lucas Smith. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was what I wanted to say.
How fast is it?
In what?
I don't know, to you.
I'll do them.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Here.
Oh.
was complete input from source code?
Yeah.
From the
image.
From the image. Okay.
Then you can import from MC files. I usually keep my histories in MC files. I can say one MC file, or I can indicate one directly, and then you can get all the sequences of the MC files. Then you can export it. The configuration works like this. For example, here in the PC, you see a rendering which is then exported as an image, so it's not interactive, but still you can see how it would look like on a dummy system. For example, if I say now the package should be from red to blue, you can see the change. It's like that. And the system, it looks like that. It's a bit draggy, but...
Can you import the information from store?
Yeah, actually, Moose has that, so I can start Moose browser from here. Uh-huh. And actually, whatever I import here is updated if the Moose is started from the code system. And in Moose, apart from the smalltalk image and bundles and so on, this is, by the way, the interface to create histories. This one doesn't know at all whether you are honest about those things being the same system. So if you say RBML code seed and so on, it will try to find things that are common, like names, and maybe you won't find. And here you have import from store.
Ah, right.
So it works from those. I didn't put it because I'm not using that often.
Thanks a lot.
And here is the evolution part. Here you can
look at it.
Creating a map is one thing. What if I want to use it? How long does it take me to understand the theory that's behind it? How to interpret it, those maps, and how to locate problems and how to solve them?
Actually, that's a pretty good question, because depending on the task you are trying to solve, it's very important. You don't have infinite amounts of carriers of visual information. You have the height, the width, and so on, the position in some cases, and you really need to choose them carefully. But I think working with it and knowing what you want to do, by doing this, for example, I want to change, this is now a terrain, I would like it to be it looks like this. But this is not, this is just fancy stuff, but the important thing is here. So if you have the package, if you have the class, for example, on the height, you have an identity number for a number of methods. And what you get here is all the metrics that Moose provides you for the class. If you go on the method, then what you get here is, so if here is a reflection. You get everything that the method has. So you have to play with it. I'm sure there are lots of things that I haven't thought of.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008, held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, the Smalltalkers group at Ning. You can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.